Welcome to the Spartan Underground Show, your ultimate resource for everything Spartan race training. Discover what the best SGX coaches are doing to help their clients boost performance, dominate obstacles, and get through each race burpee free. Here is your host, Mike Diebler.
Hey everybody, this is SGX coach Mike Diebler, and thanks for joining us. This is episode number 3 for the Spartan Underground Show. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at info@spartanunderground.com. And any links that are mentioned or really anything talked about in this podcast is going to be found at the show notes on our website. Just visit www.spartanunderground.com/podcast and you can get all those links there. Really excited about today. We have an awesome interview in store for you. We got SGX coach Todd Cambio on, who's going to talk to us about kettlebell training. He's actually one of the instructors when I got certified as an SGX coach that led the workshop, him and Joe DI. So really excited to get him on here. He just has so much knowledge that he's going to be able to share and pass on to you on how to help you train better and just smarter for your next Spartan race or just really just training in general. But before we get to the interview, just a couple things that I wanted to go over. Number one, for our research review this week, I figured since we had Coach Cambio on here, it just only seemed appropriate to review a kettlebell study that I thought you might find interesting. This was from 2011, and it's actually where I found this article was not from a publication, but instead it was a master's thesis from San Diego State University by Jonathan Falactic. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but really great write-up on kettlebell training, and it was just a cool protocol used that I thought might be beneficial. And as we get into the interview, you're gonna hopefully learn all of the benefits with kettlebell training, and if you're not currently using them, I'm sure you will be once you hear this interview, because there's just so many different things you can do with them, including power training, mobility, endurance, fat loss, right? Just a ton of different things that are going to help you with your training. So this study, which was titled The Effects of Kettlebell Training on Aerobic Capacity. And if you haven't heard aerobic capacity before, that term, you may have heard the term VO2 max, but basically it's just like it sounds. It's your body's ability to create energy aerobically. So that means with oxygen. So if you are training for a race, obviously you are going to need to be very efficient with your aerobic system. The higher your VO2 max, your maximal oxygen consumption. So basically when you take in oxygen, when you breathe in, it gets into your lungs, then into your bloodstream, and then eventually to the muscle. You're not going to be able to just use all of the oxygen that you consume, right? So it's not like the more oxygen I breathe, necessarily the more I can use it, right? There's going to be a limit to how much oxygen we can actually use, and that's going to be our VO2 max. So obviously the higher that number is, the better you are at producing energy aerobically. So if you look at some elite racers or just endurance athletes around the world, they're going to have very high VO2 max. Now, some of this is going to be genetic for sure, but obviously we can control some of that with proper training. And that's what this study wanted to look at, was would kettlebell training be an effective way for improving your VO2 max. So in this study, they did 4 weeks of kettlebell training, and they used a very specific protocol, and they but I want to bring up, they used this on intercollegiate athletes. So they used this on a fit population. So I do want to keep that in mind. So if you are never trained with kettlebells before, or just never trained in general, you may not get the same benefit. But typically the more you have been training, the harder it is to get each additional gain. Unfortunately, that's just the law of diminishing returns, where the more and more you train, the less and less results you will typically see. Which is why when you're first getting started, just about anything you do is going to improve your performance, help you lose weight, or whatever your goal might be. You're going to see massive improvements just by doing something, because it's such a big change. But once you've been getting used to that program, it gets harder and harder to get those results. So that's what they used, was a more of a fit client, fit athlete for this study. And what they wanted to test, they used a single exercise. They used the kettlebell snatch, which you've probably seen before, but essentially that's taking a kettlebell and then swinging it up over your head. And I'll include a video of a kettlebell snatch. Hopefully we can get Coach Cambio to show one and put a little tutorial in to teach you proper mechanics on it. But if not, we'll at least get some video of a kettlebell snatch in case you haven't seen it. But a great total body exercise. And they used the 15-15 protocol, which was developed by Kenneth Jay. And essentially all that is, it's an interval workout with kettlebell snatches. So you are going to do 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off of kettlebell snatches, alternating hands, and you're going to do that for 20 minutes total. So that would end up being 10 minutes of actual work and then 10 minutes of rest throughout that period for a total of 20 minutes. And they compared this to a kind of a traditional circuit weight training routine, and they wanted to see specifically what benefited VO2 max more or the same, or what were the results. So they did this protocol for 4 weeks, like I mentioned, and what they found was the kettlebell group actually saw better improvements in VO2 max. They saw an improvement of 6.4% in their VO2 max, which again, that might not sound like a huge number, but this is already a fit person doing this test. So every extra percent they get is going to be critical. So if you're already in decent shape and you're not doing something like this, try this actual protocol out in your routine regularly, right? So 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off. If you're not comfortable with the snatch, you can stick with a more basic movement like a kettlebell swing, right, and get a lot of the same benefit there. All right, so compared to circuit weight training, kettlebell training, using the kettlebell snatch, 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off was more effective for improving VO2 max, which will directly relate to improvements in your next Spartan race. So give that a try and definitely give me some feedback and let me know how it goes. All right, and next up, I wanted to go over our resource of the week. And just a reminder, this is basically some tool, an app, a supplement, a piece of exercise equipment, basically anything that I find, either that I personally use or I just hear about or just do some research and find out about, that might help you with your training and with your racing. And today I just had one that came across my desk, and I just thought it was so interesting. I wanted to at least get it out there. I will admit I have not used it yet, but it is something that I want to try. And it's another form of wearable technology. So I'm sure everybody's familiar with, you know, the Fitbits and the iWatches and all the different things out there to monitor steps and heart rate and all those things. So there's this new technology, and the company is called BSX Insight. And it's specifically designed for endurance sports, endurance athletes. And it's a wearable technology. It kind of looks like a compression sleeve that you would wear around your lower leg on your calf. And the cool thing that it does is actually measure lactate threshold, which is pretty cool. So if you're not familiar with lactate threshold, you probably heard of something like lactate or lactic acid. And we won't get into too much physiology, but when you're producing energy anaerobically using glycolysis or breaking down sugar, a byproduct, it's not a waste product, but a byproduct of that process is lactate. When lactate builds up, it is actually taken into the bloodstream, and it can be sent to the liver and actually used to create more glycogen, which we can use for more energy. So we kind of have this cycle going around in our body. So as you create lactate, you essentially get rid of it and turn it into more energy down the road. And this occurs primarily when you're doing more intense exercise, right? So we're producing energy anaerobically or without oxygen. So your harder interval type training or strength training type movements is primarily where you can see this lactate buildup. Now, the more lactate that builds up, you can only handle so much at a time. So it'll eventually, think of it as just piling up, kind of creates a traffic jam, and it's going to get stuck. And the higher levels of blood lactate you receive, the less you're going to be able to contribute energy-wise anaerobically, and you won't be able to keep up that higher intensity, and you're going to have to back down because you're going to primarily start using energy aerobically. And you just can't keep those high intensities when you're producing energy aerobically. So the more you can get from anaerobic energy production, the more intense, the faster, the harder you're going to be able to go. So kind of similar to VO2 max that we were just talking about, the higher your lactate threshold, the more lactate you can handle, and the higher intensity you'll be able to train, and the harder you're going to be able to go for longer before you need to get more from that aerobic energy system. So obviously, again, genetics will play a role, but training is going to be a big portion of it. And the hard part is you probably have no clue where your lactate threshold is, right? You might use perceived exertion where you're just going to run really hard until you can't go anymore and just kind of use that. But what you're seeing really elite athletes do is they know their lactate levels, right? They know their lactate threshold levels. They can do metabolic testing and VO2 max testing. This is something we actually do at our studio, where you can run on a treadmill and you put a mask on that's measuring carbon dioxide and oxygen to see where these different levels are occurring. So then you'll know approximately what heart rate you're hitting these levels. And now you know when you go to train, if you want to improve lactate thresholds, you know exactly what intensity level you need to be doing. So this wearable technology is actually helping you find out where your lactate threshold level is, making your training more specific. So you know exactly when you go out, if you're trying to push your lactate levels, you know exactly how hard you're going to have to go. So it takes away the guesswork. So just wanted to mention it because I thought it was such a cool piece of technology. So again, it's BSX Insight. You can just go to BSXinsight.com. To check it out. It's not overly expensive. It's around $60, so definitely reasonable. It just uses LED lights to essentially look into your muscle, and this light helps measure these lactate threshold levels. So it's something I definitely want to look more into. If you have actually used something like this already, I'd love to get your feedback. I know I've actually seen a few research papers coming out using this technology that have shown it to be fairly accurate and a great addition to your training tools. So lactate threshold training is really a must in your training program, and the more specific you can get, the better. So using a tool like this would be incredibly beneficial. So give it a try if you're willing to experiment a little bit. All right, and like I mentioned, I'm really excited about today's guest. Today we have Coach Todd Cambio, aka the Red Gorilla, and as I mentioned, he was actually one of the instructors that led the course when I became an SGX certified coach, and just such an awesome experience. The guy is a wealth of knowledge, and he was really one of the first people I thought of when I started this podcast on who can I reach out to that is just going to provide a ton of content and a ton of valuable information to help people improve their Spartan race training, because we just learned so much from him. So Todd is obviously a SGX coach, a level 2 SGX coach. I believe he was one of the first SGX coaches when they first came out with the program, but he's also a instructor for Strong First, which is a kettlebell organization that he's going to talk about and just kind of their style of training. So that was one of the main things I wanted to get him on here, help you with your kettlebell training if you're currently using it, if you're not training with the kettlebell, hopefully convince you that you need to incorporate it into your training program. And then we're going to get into a bunch of other great tips for your Spartan race training. So enjoy the interview. All right, so today we have Coach Cambio on with us, and we're going to cover a whole bunch of different topics. I know you guys are going to get some awesome insight into your training programs out of this. So first, just want to say, hey, Coach Cambio, how you doing?
Good, man. How you doing, Mike? Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, doing awesome. And nobody listening is going to know this, but this is our take 2. We had some technical difficulties, so
we did.
You know, stuff happens, right? And you just got to push on and
obstacles,
make it work.
Mike, obstacles.
Exactly. So
I'm hoping this is a little obstacle we just got over. But yeah, so before we get too far into it, if you don't mind, just going over a quick bio, letting people know a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into Spartan racing.
Yeah, no, sure, sure. So I've been, I've been coaching now for 20 plus years. I originally started with all athletes. I was originally a strength conditioning coach, mostly with high school kids. And I started that. I was also a teacher at the time, high school football coach. And I just got into training my athletes after school in the off season because their injury rates are so high. I mean, they're basically doing like old school bodybuilding programs. Mm-hmm. So they weren't really getting faster. They're just kind of getting big, bulky, and slow. So, and hurt, you know? So yeah. I just, you know, I decided to dive into the strength conditioning field. I got certified through the NSCA, so a strength conditioning specialist. I did an internship with a close friend of mine and kind of really just started learning the ropes of how to train people on movement based. And then not just on movement, but then, okay, well, what am I trying to, you know, elicit from my athletes? Is it speed? Is it power? Is it strength? Is it mobility, stability? So I just kind of started learning and implemented it with all my athletes, football first. Then it branched into I ended up getting the baseball and softball teams to work with me. And then going into the next school year for football, I started a summer program. And the results were tremendous. And it just kind of grew from there. And I just really, you know, I enjoyed it. So I just kept trying to learn. And awesome. Then, you know, opened up my facility, owned my facility for 9 years, got into Spartan doing that. And quite frankly, that was all marketing thing. I just said, what the hell, I won't learn much from here. But, you know, I can get the Spartan name.
Ooh, yeah.
Get people in my gym.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, I love the philosophies. I was dead on with their principles and, you know, the Spartan code. I loved it. And it just resonated with me. And I don't know, I just kind of dove in to Spartan from there. Now I'm a master instructor. Cool figure, you know?
That's awesome. You know, and that's actually really funny you say that, because I'll admit a lot of it was the same for me, where it's like, you know, I did a couple Spartan races. I heard there was a certification. I'm like, I should probably do this because it'd be great for business. But just like you said, once I got into it, it's like I understand what they're saying, and this is the message that I want to convey to my clients. Yeah. So it was just so much more than just the training. So that's just funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
It was a good slap in the face to realize that there is somebody out there doing good work.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So we're going to get into your training style and in a second, but I just like to start out with kind of, again, just going back to starting with Spartan. I'm sure you remember your first Spartan race, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I remember it very well.
Yeah. So what was your experience with your first Spartan race?
First race, it was awesome. I loved it. It was kind of fun, but at the same time, it was like interesting because, I mentioned I did it for the cert. So, of course, you meet Dr. J and Jody I and all those guys. And so I did mine November, very first certification that went through, that got certified, which was in November. And then the next week, there was the Fenway Stadium race,
nice.
The first Fenway. So that was my first Spartan race. I'd done some other races prior and loved them, but Spartan just went to a whole nother level in my mind. So I finished the race. Here's a quick little side story. So I go through the race, you know, it's a stadium, so you're doing all, you know, a little more like slam balls and monster jump ropes and push-ups and just, you know, a few little different things, which are kind of fun in a stadium. Lots of stairs, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, I cross the finish line, get my first Spartan medal. I'm psyched. Me and my buddy, you know, great thing. There's Dr. J. He's like, hey, coach, I'm testing, I'm doing a burpee test. You know, I want to get some data. I'm like, what? Burpee test? I just crossed the finish line. He's like, come on, man, you just did it for the cert. I'm like, yeah, I did. Thought I was done with that for a while, but no, I had to do the burpee test right away.
Nice.
As soon as I crossed the line, me and my buddy, so it was fun.
Awesome.
The whole thing was I actually beat my number from the certification by a few, so
oh,
I was happy.
Go. Yeah.
But, yeah, it was kind of funny. Crossed the line, then I'm doing another 5-minute burpee test. But it was good. It was all fun. So that's my first impression.
Awesome.
It was phenomenal race, great people. I can't say enough about it.
Awesome. So I have to ask, so before the 5-minute burpee test, how many burpees did you do during the race, any?
Zero.
Awesome.
No, sorry. 30. You know what? So that first race, okay, I will brag on, you know, on record, I have yet to miss a spear throw in a race. Still to this day, 5 years later. But the Fenway race had a baseball toss, you know, baseball onto the bucket.
Yeah.
I was a pitcher at one point. I'm like, oh, it's a piece of cake. I went up there, man, I missed it bad. 30 burpees.
Oh, no.
I was so pissed.
That's funny.
But, yeah, so I kind of pride myself on getting through the obstacles. I may not be the fastest runner. I'm a little bulkier, I guess we'll say, because of some of the training styles I like to do. But, I'm good at the obstacles.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's a huge advantage. When you don't have to do burpees. I mean, 30 burpees takes some time, so.
Yes, it does.
I'd rather run slow and do the obstacles and not do burpees. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, cool. So let's get into your, really why I wanted to get you on here. And that is your unique training background with kettlebell training. So let's just start with that. So why kettlebells? What's the big deal with them? And obviously I know a lot of these answers, but just for anyone who's not using kettlebells, why might they want to start using them?
Okay, no, great. Yes, kettlebells, I do love them. They're quite a unique tool. They literally are a cannonball with handles. They come in a wide range of sizes. I mean, you get sport bells are the same size for everything but different weights. I go more of the hard style, the cast iron. So I like to like the different sizes as I go up in weight. But the kettlebell is just, it's such a unique tool. It really is. It allows you to do ballistics, which is like a swing itself or a snatch or high pulls or things like that. And it lets you do grinds, which are like more of the power lift type things, or even a Turkish get up, which is a very, what's the word, involved movement. if you do it correctly, or at least the way I like to teach it. Mm-hmm. And what's very unique about them is just the fact that, you know, it boils down to my philosophy. The bottom line, my philosophy is I want you to be athletic. I want you to train fingertips to toes. I want you to have a push, a pull, a core, a unilateral, a lateral movement, a backwards movement, a hip hinge, and a squat. Like, these things have to be in my programs, every program, every day. So whether it's in the warm-up or the workout, those elements have to be in there. And I'm trying to bring out the inner athlete in people. So the kettlebell just allowed me to do a lot more. I was doing, you know, ballistic hip hinges. I was doing a grind move, which is a Turkish get-up, and I'm getting mobility, stability, strength, all out of one movement. I'm doing a rotational pattern, a lunge pattern. It's just like, and it's unilateral, you know, mm-hmm. one arm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing one-arm swings. I'm doing one-arm get-ups and one-arm windmills. I can use it as a mobility tool where I'm doing windmills again, but something like an arm bar or halos. So it's just a tool that you can literally go in the middle of a football field and do every single body part.
Awesome.
And get power, strength, whatever it is you want to get out of a core. And it's just one of those things that people don't understand to dive into it.
Yeah. And, the first time we were doing this interview, we were talking about this, but I think that's one of the coolest things with kettlebells is all that diversity that you just mentioned, where you need to work on some power. There are obviously power moves you can do. You need strength. We can do some strength stuff. And then adding that mobility portion in there. Can you just touch on mobility a little bit and just, not even just with the kettlebell, but where that falls into a program and its importance and things like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I kind of follow the basic formula of you must have mobility, then build stability, then build strength, and then power, explosion, endurance, whatever route you want to get more specific with after that. But, you know, being mobile, I mean, I'm not saying everyone has to be like a yogi, but you got to have some normal, quote, range of motion where you aren't going to start doing a workout program or playing a sport and get hurt. So you got to have some reasonable mobility, specifically in, you know, most people, you know, what hurts? Their knees, their hips, their back, shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if their hips are tight, you might want to do a little soft tissue work. You might want to get into some stability work with the hips. And, you know, a movement base to help that is a get up. You know, you can do some soft tissue work. Then you could learn the get up with just like a shoe on your hand, the old shoe on the hand to make sure you can do the movement and just go nice and slow and steady. When you get weight in your hand, now you're adding a significant amount of stability, but still going through all these different movement patterns, which are going to help you, you know, everything from hip to T-spine to shoulder mobility, all that stuff. So, of course, there are other ways to do it. I'm just, you know, singling out a kettlebell right now. Yeah. Because I think you get more bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. So. And when you're in a pinch for time, it's the more you can get done in one move or two moves, the better it is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No. That's fine. One thing I did want to bring up, and this is kind of how you taught our class when I got certified, but that's where we started was mobility. And, we did the basically from the ground up, and I just wanted you to kind of talk about that. What does that mean, the ground up? And
So absolutely, I didn't know how detailed we're going. So, every course, and again, this is where Spartan and I are dead on in our principles. We start from the bottom up, the bottom of your feet, work your way up from your big toe all the way into your arches of your feet, up into your calf, anterior tib and posterior side, and just working all the way up into the hips, glutes, quads, hammies, adductors. Boom! Now you're up to your, to your back, into the thoracic spine. Just literally, joint by joint, up the body, start working on things.
Awesome.
Again, if certain things are a little tighter, if you get a lot of like for me, calf pain is a big one in any kind of long race, or cramping, I guess. Hasn't been in a few years, but until I spent more time on my feet, in particular, my feet and calf work, I used to cramp a lot, and I thought it was more nutrition related. So I found out I just had all balled up tissue. So, I started really working on, lacrosse ball, barbells on my calves, lacrosse ball on my feet, and just working range of motion of my ankles, doing circles each way, gas pedal, I call it, pushing the gas off the gas when I get some pressure on my calves. And it's done wonders for me. I haven't cramped in probably 2-3 years.
Awesome. Awesome.
I'm talking beast distances. So.
Sweet.
So I think where people are missing the mobility piece is it just has to be like spend a little time. It could be as little as 5 minutes, some people a little more. But if you have some things that are bugging you, spend a little more time on that. Don't go through the body like from, toes to fingertips and spend, 10 minutes on every body part. Mm-hmm. Target the things that need the most work and work on them daily.
Gotcha.
And then it'll just be kind of like brushing your teeth. It'll just be like a normal routine. You get it done quick, but effectively.
Yeah. Awesome, yeah. And it's almost like you can kind of that first time play around with it a little bit more, and then you focus in from there. Awesome.
Yeah. And you'll find what helps the most, whether it's a lacrosse ball, whether it's just a foam roller, whether it's a barbell, so you'll kind of find the tool. And believe me, I should do a video. Someone asked me about it the other day. Is kettlebells for your forearm? Oh my God, unbelievable! If you have any kind of wrist pain or wrist restrictions,
yeah,
I can do a whole routine just with a kettlebell.
Awesome.
Just yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. If you do post the video, I'll make sure to put it on here.
And do it.
Yeah, I'll let you be the demonstrator for that one. And I'll actually post. I know you've already done a bunch of videos on pretty much everything we've talked about, so I'll snag a couple from your website and then put them on here as well, so people can check out exactly what we're talking about if they don't know what a getup is or a halo or whatever. All right, just real quick, going back to kettlebells. So you mentioned hard style, and I just want it, just in case people aren't familiar with kettlebell training, can you just kind of get into what hard style is, what other styles are out there, and maybe what might be more specific for Spartan races, if there is one?
That's actually a great question, because I do think people are kind of confused as to what some of the styles are. So the basic style is hard style, which I'll end with, but you have American style that's been popularized by CrossFit, where you're swinging the bell overhead, and then you see some other movements that are commonly done. It's not necessarily my favorite move. The American style swing is basically a two-handed snatch.
Mm-hmm.
My problem just comes in the form that's been out there lately. It's very it's ugly, and there's a lot of overextension of the back, shoulder injuries, things like that. It's kind of squatty instead of a hip hinge, so it just kind of opens your body up for injury, like repetitive injury use. So that's just a style, American style, mm-hmm. which is very similar to hard style, like I said, which I'll get to in a moment. But the other style is sport style. So if you compete in kettlebell type lifting, which is, I am not an expert in that. I've dabbled in it. I've played with it. I've talked to a bunch of peers of mine who are very much into it. And while I respect it and think they do some awesome stuff, and I'd actually like to dive in a little more with it, doesn't quite fit my needs as an athlete. It's truly a sport. Like golf, it's a great sport. I love the sport of golf as far as how they move and their skill set and all that, but it's not going to help me too much in a Spartan race.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not going to help me as a football player get better on a football field, but it's a great sport. It has great range of motion. It's great skill. And hell, I got some great friends who are awesome at golf, and I'll go play with them, but I'm certainly not good at it because I'm not going to spend time on it because it doesn't help me get where I need to go.
Yeah.
Whereas hard style, on the other hand, so Gjørvik sport, it's more, it's just different. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like momentum-based. It's like endurance, Olympic lifting kind of, but I don't want endurance. I want strength and power when I'm touching a kettlebell. So I go hard style. And a hard style is definitely strength and power. It is definitely, you know, it's ballistic, it's grinds, it's all this like full force everything you got and then relax.
Mm-hmm.
Full force everything you got, then relax. So I think, and this is what I preach when I teach, is it is the most athletic style of training you can do. And I will simply boil that down to the general athletic position. Like, again, think of a shortstop. What is their position getting ready, you know, each play? What is, like me, a linebacker in college, what was my position every single play before the snap of the ball, that ready position, that general athletic position? That is where the swing originates from. You start in that athletic position. You hike the bell hard. You snap your hips up quickly using your glutes, quads, and abs. And you're actually firing up a ton of fast twitch muscles, a ton of explosive athletic power. It also, I think, in my opinion, the swing, hard style swing, targets the weakest links in the body, or most programs, the glutes, mm-hmm. hammies, and the whole posterior chain. Mm-hmm. You really are working your lats big time as well. So it's just one of those things where the setup of the swing, hard style swing, is meant for an athlete, in my opinion. So if you swing, if you clean, if you high pull, if you snatch, if you single swings, double, all that stuff all comes down to being athletic. And then the flip side, you know, that's a ballistic move, that constant, you know, swinging, which is explosive, then relaxing, getting back, you know, hiking the bell back. Now you do something like a get up and you start loading that thing up, like I'm talking 100 pounds in your hand, you know, a beast bell. 48 kilos, 106 pounds. Now you got some real strength.
Yeah.
You can do that, you know, one get up each side of the body. That's pretty good. You know, that's a lot of strength and stability and mobility, in my opinion. So you got a ballistic that is beautiful. You got a grind, which is another great movement because it goes back to the fundamentals. It's a mobility, it's stability, it's strength. If you look at the movement and patterns involved in a get-up, I mean, you start off with a rolling pattern, then you get a hip extension. You know, now you got the bell overhead, so now you're working thoracic spine and shoulder mobility, and then you lunge, get into a lunge position, you stand up, and then you reverse it, and you get back down. So you get all these movement patterns going on in just one beautiful movement. So the hard style is really the best of both worlds.
Nice.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
It really is.
And then when you get good at that get up, you start lifting people, correct?
Yeah, that tends to happen sometimes.
Yeah. I think was that Brandy you were lifting in
Coach Riggs, yeah. You can put that one on.
I'll put that one on. So not that's to start with that one, but
it's called a human get up. So yeah. we had fun with that one. So
yeah.
It was good.
Awesome. And then I think it's Stuart McGill with his, you know, super stiffness and kind of how he defines an athlete. I'm pretty sure it was him who would talk about this and about basically when he's studying, you know, some of the most elite athletes in the world, what kind of sets them apart is that ability to contract and relax and where they can get super stiff, but then they can immediately follow it with the relaxation phase and then get super stiff again. So,
yep.
I mean, if you're training for a Spartan race and you're an athlete, you're always going to have an advantage. So to train like an athlete just makes sense to give yourself that advantage.
I agree. Awesome. And as for, you just make me think, going back to just the whole Spartan training is, I mean, these bells, yes, they do all this power and strength, which I love, but start doing like ladders, swing ladders, 10 swings, say, every 30 seconds. You do that for 5 minutes, let me tell you, you're going to be huffing and puffing. Your work capacity, aerobic capacity is going to go through the roof at that point.
Exactly.
Plus your grip strength. I mean, you know as well as I do, you need some serious grip strength
to do
well in Spartan races. And kettlebell, I'm sorry, you start swinging that thing and lifting it,
mm-hmm.
your forearm and grip strength is going to be through the roof in no time.
Yeah. And it's another cool thing, just, you know, killing multiple birds with one stone. It's like, yep. People will say, like, well, I don't have time to do this and do that all in my program. It's like, all right, well, do some swings so you get all of this all in one. So while we're talking about swings, just real quick. So what do you think the biggest mistakes you see with a swing are, just to kind of help people get started?
Yeah, I mean,
I know it's hard to do in it. Yeah, yeah. Just one or two that you see.
You do need to have someone who has experience who can help you with it. Looking at videos is great, but it's not the same as live. But biggest mistakes are, of course, everyone tells me their back hurts. Mm-hmm. That is by far the number one thing. So I'm telling everyone right now, if your back hurts swinging or deadlifting or doing anything, doing a plank, your form is off, something's wrong. Okay? Very easy to tell. So things that I see just watching people randomly swing, they may stand up with the bell and then start randomly, you know, humping the air to get the bell starting. Mm-hmm. That doesn't cut it. It looks dumb, it doesn't work. Okay. You've already started loose, you need to start with tension. So in order to protect your spine, you have to create tension. So you create tension by getting in that athletic position, the bell in front of you, like you're a center in football about to hike the ball. So you're basically hiking the bell and you're using your lats to do that. So I call it a triangle. Your feet, your 2 feet, and the kettlebell is one triangle. The other triangle is your 2 knees and your crotch. Mm-hmm. So you start and stop every single set in the triangle with the bell on the ground. Every single swing, you stay in the triangle, meaning the bell should be above your knees. Your hands are basically in your crotch every swing when it comes back down through to hike. So that's like the biggest thing. If the bell gets away from you, meaning the bell is below your knees, you're just using your back. You're back swinging instead of using the most powerful muscle in your body, your hips or muscles, you know, your hips and glutes, hammies, all that good stuff. So, yes, to protect the back, keep the bell in the crotch, start and stop every set, like a center in football. And then when you swing, use all hips. There's absolutely no arms. It's not some glorified front raise. You know? It's not like I can see a squatty front raise all the time. Mm-hmm. You can see it like on the Fitbit commercial. It's horrible. They show like this girl doing like a squat with a front raise. It's like, that's all fine and dandy if you're using like, you know, 10-pound belt.
Yeah.
But get a, you know, seriously, I think all guys should be swinging a 32 kilo, 72 pounds like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. One-handed, if not two, for sure. All my women swing 32 kilos, no problem, two-handed. Mm-hmm. Because they learn how to do it, and they learn to create that tension, then relax. So when you thrust your hips forward, get tall, squeeze your glutes, your quads, and your abs, and that bell should never go higher than, say, you know, your chest level. And when you're in that chest level, you should be in what I call a standing plank. Glutes, quads, and abs are on, lats are holding the bell from, like, meaning keeping the bell from getting away from you so it doesn't pull you off center. And then just relax on the way down. Play chicken with the bell. Just stay as long as you can straight, meaning upright posture. Keep yourself as straight as you can until like the very last second, then hike the bell back again. And it takes practice. I'm not going to say it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But if you can do that, I mean, seriously, it's just a ballistic deadlift, really. Yeah. That's all a swing is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you end the swing when the bell is out in front of you, and you should be in a perfect plank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then relax, let the bell come down, and then just repeat.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but yes, it takes practice. It's hard to explain it. A lot of times you need like visual aids to kind of go through it.
Definitely.
Any course I ever do, we spend a lot of time on the swing and just all the cues for it to help people.
Yeah, and I just going back to the weights you were saying, I think it's a lot of these exercises with the kettlebell, it's almost easier to learn it with heavier loading, because you can't, I mean, if you can just front raise it, that probably tells you right there it's too light for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here's the other thing, and, you know, some people may or may not agree with this, but if I said to deadlift something, just pick something off the ground, and I can tell my 10-year-old son, here's a 100-pound kettlebell, can you pick it up? Oh, yeah, I can. He'll go over and he'll struggle, but he'll pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, deadlift it up, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you take it, you know, and you know, a fairly athletic person or just an adult, and you tell them to pick up, say, 24 kilo, 50 pounds. That's what a suitcase is, you know, what the legal limit is for a suitcase. I mean, you should be able to pick up 50 pounds, no problem, right?
Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah. Two hands, pick it up off the ground, put it back down. Well, you're never really doing, quote, heavy with a kettlebell when you swing it. You're just not. You can't ballistically move something too heavy. I mean, if you can move your body weight, that's some serious weight you're moving.
Yeah.
So just imagine you're picking up 52 or 53 pounds, which is 24 kilos. All you got to do is swing the thing. So you're always doing a sub-max load. Mm-hmm. You're never doing, like, what you consider heavy for a swing. It's never really heavy. It's just a sub-max load.
Yeah.
So you should be able to move the weight. It's just, if you can move it with your shoulders, it's too light.
Yeah.
It's way too light. And you'll find out quickly as you get a little heavier where you're off. Because if that bell is throwing you around, something's off.
Yeah.
What is
it?
We have to figure out what it is. So I'm not saying go crazy heavy, but, you know, heavier than what you think you should most of the time.
Yeah.
It'll fix a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Most people honestly go too light. So what do? They learn to move the bell poorly. So they learn poor patterns. And I tell my athletes this all the time. If I'm coaching you in basketball, do I teach you to miss the free throw? I don't.
I hope not.
So you don't practice missing or else you never get good at it, right?
Yeah.
So why would you sit there and swing a bell that's 10 pounds that you're doing terrible form with, but you can hide it because it's easy? It's like, no. Practice doing it right.
Yeah.
Practice free throws. You know, a swing is like a free throw. Practice perfect form every time. The goal is never to miss. So that's kind of how I teach bells, you know, from an athletic standpoint. Practice makes perfect. Every movement is a perfect movement. If you lose, if you're fizzling, grip, whatever, put the bell down. If you lose the hip hop, put the bell down. Shake it out. Get back on the iron in a little bit.
Awesome.
So
cool. And I'll make sure we have some good video in there of some swings and all these other exercises. So people can.
And you can always tell me, seriously, you can just tell me to make some new stuff that looks a little cleaner.
All right.
Who knows? You know? I mean, I make what people want for videos. So just kind of go with it.
Awesome. Perfect. All right. Well, I just have a couple more kind of rapid fire questions for you. I know I don't want to take up too much of your time here, but number one, what's your absolute favorite obstacle?
You know, I just love walls, but that's kind of a lame answer. So I just love walls. I don't know why. But, you know, I just like the multi-rig now because I told you I like to do well at the obstacles. That was the first obstacle that got me three times in a row.
Yeah.
I fell off of. So now I like it because it's kind of in my mind, my greatest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that is now my favorite.
All right. And they're making it tougher and tougher for sure.
I know.
Yeah.
Multi-rig with the rings. I like the rings better than the hanging ropes. Rings, but yeah.
Definitely. How about, do you have a least favorite?
Least favorite. You know, it's just because I like strength, but I wish they'd actually put some weight on the obstacle, like on the obstacles we lift and carry, meaning, you know, any of the Atlas stones or in stadiums, those, I guess they're stones, but whatever they are, we pick up.
Yeah.
They're just too light. I mean, put some actual weight there.
There you go.
People actually do something strength-based.
All right. Awesome. All right. How about a quick advice for a first-time racer?
Go have fun. Don't think.
Awesome.
Just go.
Yeah.
Take your time. Get through it. Enjoy it. You paid the money for the race. It's your race. If you feel like skipping something, skip it.
Mm-hmm.
Just learn from the experience. Have fun.
Awesome.
Don't think about anything else. Have fun.
Perfect. Awesome advice. And then, how about a resource that, people can use?
Well, of course there's my own, right?
Yeah. But why don't we go over that?
You can always do toddcambio.com, or you can go to my, Instagram, which is Coach Cambio. Facebook, Coach Cambio, all that stuff. A lot of resources there. I have a YouTube channel, which is Coach Cambio as well. So lots of stuff there. And if I don't have something, shoot me a message and a text, an email, whatever. And I answer things and make videos for people all the time.
Awesome. Awesome. And I know you have some great products on, building your own obstacles and monster tire training and some cool stuff. So what I'll do is I'm just going to link everything, and then people can kind of go through and check out all the videos,
sure,
the programs, and just learn that way. And all right, well, that's it. Thank you so much for coming on here. I know we went over a lot of stuff, but there was a ton of valuable information in there for people to train properly, train efficiently, and just go kill their next race. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, pleasure.
All right.
Anytime.
So I'll sure we'll be in touch soon.
All right, bud.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for episode 3 of the Spartan Underground SGX podcast. And I wanted to thank our guest today, Coach Todd Cambio. I thought he gave us some awesome insights into training. I know some of the exercises that we talked about might be hard to picture, so don't forget to check out the show notes for a few examples of some kettlebell exercises. Just go to spartanunderground.com/podcast and you'll be able to see all of our episodes. Or you can just go to spartanunderground.com/episode-3 to get direct access to all the links from this specific episode. That's it for now. One quick thing I wanted to mention, we actually are running a promotion right now. We have our 90 days to Spartan training program. So it's a 90-day training program. You get all three programs, which is going to be the sprint distance, the super distance, and the beast distance. One, we're doing it on sale, 50% off. You can get it right now for $49. And if you, for the first 25 people that sign up, you actually get a free pair of Spartan Underground SGX compression socks, which are pretty cool, just in time for your next race. So you can find that. Again, just visit the show notes and you'll see the direct link for that deal. And that's it for now. Until next time, keep training hard, and we will see you soon.